Hello, I'm Matt Cholley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. It's Wednesday, so it must be How Much Are We Going to Hear from Lindsay Hoyle Today Day? It's PMQ's Unpacked. We pause the action live from the House of Commons. Rishi Sunak has got troubles of his own. Keir Starmer's got troubles of his own. Lindsay Hoyle has got troubles of his own. Who emerges from it best? Find out as Tim Shipman and I are joined by Ed Vasey, off of Times Radio and the red benches of the House of Lords. Pulls the action from the House of Commons and Lava Spirit rounds up the best of the rest. Before that, the columnists Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on where we should and shouldn't be protesting. And former Education Secretary Kenneth Baker joins us to discuss whether young people just need lessons in coping with life. And if you like what you hear on the podcast, join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio. Listen for free on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. It's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. But first, on Politics Without the Boring Bits, we start with
a major capital letters big news story.
And GB News exclusively revealed that GB News presenter and Reform leader Richard Tice held secret talks with GB News presenter and suspended Tory MP Lee Anderson. Yes, GB News understands that the pair met for in-person talks on a Sunday lunchtime at a Holiday Inn at Junction 28 of the M1 in Derbyshire. Right near South Normanton. Well, back in your box, GB News, we've got the exclusive. Times Radio has obtained exclusive recording of the conversation between Lee Anderson and Richard Tice held in the lobby of the motorway hotel.
Oh, quick tip. You know the breakfast buffet? Eat as much as you like, but from an 8-inch plate. See that? 12 inches.
And the news keeps coming.
A major capital letters big news story.
Yeah, big news. It's the battery factory. The battery factory is happening. Ta-ta! Has confirmed it is going to build its £4 billion battery factory in Somerset, just outside Bridgewater, about 20 minutes from where I grew up. It's all anyone is talking about. 4,000 jobs in the region. It's great news. Great news for Somerset. Somerset on the map. Well, it's obviously always been on the map. That's how maps work. But great news. The battery factory, £4 billion on the battery factory down in Somerset. Exciting. I wonder how many times, the last time I said battery factory a lot, people got very cross, didn't they? So I won't do that. And finally,
a major capital letters big news story.
Yeah, it all kicked off at the post office inquiry yesterday. MPs taking evidence from post office bosses. And the bosses being asked if they were running riot. This real sense they're untouchable and face no consequences. And at one point, Simon Recalden, the remediation matters director at the post office, told the committee of MPs he felt he was accountable. He was asked if he was untouchable.
I can echo that, and I can tell you that I am challenged regularly, and I am very touchable. And I am very touchable. And I am very touchable.
I want to feel your body.
I can echo that, and I can tell you that I am challenged regularly, and I am very touchable.
So am I.
Didn't seem too convinced there, my
touch me. Touch me now.
And I am very touchable.
Touch me now.
And I am very touchable.
Touch me now.
And I can tell you that I am challenged regularly, and I am very touchable.
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton.
And they're both here. Of course they are. Hello, Alice.
Hello.
Hello, Robert.
Hello, Matt.
We're matching again.
I know, but do you have like a WhatsApp group where you agree that your colours?
No, it's just...
We just take it very seriously.
Last week it was brown, week before was maroon, this week it's quite funereal black.
It's just telepathy.
Is it?
Yeah.
You've been working together for so long.
Yes.
Like a sort of husband and wife magician couple in...
Very similar.
Yeah. Touring the campsites.
Yeah. He cuts them in half sometimes.
Although I think I'd be the lovely assistant.
You hate each other, but you love magic.
I'd be the lovely assistant. And, Alice would be Paul Daniels, I think.
I'd like to see that. I can see that on the cover of the Times magazine.
Yeah.
We could start your show, couldn't we?
Yeah, you could. You could be my warm-up.
I think I'd be quite good being sawn in half, actually.
Yeah, because people have asked me if I got support. And I'm like, no, why would I share the... Yeah, it's a palaver. It is without splitting the money.
Yeah, we'll come on.
You're on a posse.
You've got 2 hours of me.
a posse.
Yeah, yeah, you could go have a, go fully on tour.
Yeah.
We've only got quite a small car, though, so we haven't got we don't have much room for props. So
so we can't be a pantomime horse.
Your guillotine will have to be collapsible.
The knife throwing, yeah.
Yeah, you can't have one of those big...
You know how they do that?
Wheels. Fact,
they punch the knives through the back.
Do they?
Yeah.
You're going to get thrown out of the magic circle.
Handle first. I saw a program on it.
I think I saw something on that once as well.
Yeah, I think we should do it.
Yeah.
I don't mind having a knuckle on my head.
If you can make it to Bristol, Bristol, 8 o'clock, Friday night, you're on.
This Friday?
Yeah, the tour starts this weekend.
I think I might have a prior engagement.
Might you? Well, Swindon, do you want to come to Swindon?
Oh, I would love it. Now that you mentioned that, if it's Swindon,
I think we need a bit of a warm-up as well, don't you? We might have to practice.
Yeah, we do.
Do your stretches. Yeah, yeah. Bristol, Swindon, Salford this weekend.
Okay.
It's happening. Anyway, ticketsmattshawley.com. Right, let's go and talk about the news. James Cleverly has told pro-Palestinian demonstrators to stop their regular protests on Gaza because they've made their point. The director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Ben Jamal, spoke about this to Times Radio Breakfast.
I think James Cleverly's comments are not surprising because they're indicative of the attitude that he and the government in general take towards protest. They don't really understand its role as an important part of the democratic protest. They regard it as a hindrance, something that should be suppressed. And that shows they really don't understand how change is brought.
What do we make of this? Because there was part of me that just thought the whole point of protest, I mean, aside from the issue, the whole point of protest is to be annoying and change people's minds.
I agree 100% with Ben Jamal, I'm afraid. I don't agree with his cause. I've spoken against it many times. But he's completely right. The idea that you have a coming demonstration and then the Home Secretary says, well, thank you very much. Now, go about your business. It's absurd.
We've heard you. We're going to ignore you.
It's absurd. They should protest as much as they want.
What do you think, Alice?
Yeah, I mean, I think with James Cleverly, he doesn't know quite what to say, does he? There's almost nothing he can talk about. He can't talk about no-go areas. He can't talk about what's happening in the Tory party. But he can, you know, he's trying to talk about the protesters and sound moderate. But on the other hand, you know, that's what they're allowed to do. And I'm surprised more protesters don't do it more often. They just don't keep going over and over again.
Yeah.
My worry is that the police are getting so exhausted by it. So we don't really have much police presence on the streets anyway. So the fact that they're only now seem to be doing protests and looking after MPs is really worrying in some ways.
Sorry, Matt, you were going to say.
No, I was just going to say, so the full quote from James Cleverly in the interview with The Times today, Matt Dathan's been travelling with James Cleverly. He's in New York. He said, I think the organisers should recognise that they've made their point, they've made it loudly, and they're not adding to it by repeating themselves.
That sounds like a head teacher, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're misbehaving.
Yeah.
Okay, the sixth form.
You've done your sit-in in the canteen, but we're not changing the uniform rules.
Yeah, it's also very complacent because, I mean, rightly or wrongly, people feel very strongly about this issue. So why shouldn't they? They can protest every day of the week if they want to. I mean, I suppose that the issue he's also making is about the police, the cost of policing them. And part of the demonstrations and the reason for that they're so heavily policed is that they are, whilst largely peaceful, potentially violent. Yeah, that's the worry, that there is a threat to property and individuals.
And they can't be intimidating. So I think if people feel very intimidated about coming into London and feel they can't go anywhere because they're the rights, I think that is difficult. I think they have to be as open as they possibly can. And I think you have to be careful with the placards. And that's why you need the police there, don't you?
I mean, on the anti-Semitism march back in November, that was very lightly policed because nobody thought that there was going to be any trouble.
When the Remainers marched against Brexit or whatever.
Yes. So the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign might want to reflect on that. But they can make their point in whatever way they want within the law and without intimidating their fellow citizens.
Because we had somebody from Just Stop Oil on this week because they put out a press release about why they're going to continue targeting MPs' houses, which I personally think there are ways of going about doing it. You know, stand outside their office, stand outside Parliament. You know, there are ways of doing it without scaring MPs' children. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think even standing outside the offices actually is quite scary because you've had, you know, once an MP's been killed and they've now had two in surgeries, I think it's really intimidating for them. And actually, some of the surgeries, some of the best things that the MPs do are listening to their constituents. So if you're going to do it, I think you should be doing it in a different way. I don't actually think that you should have people standing outside MPs' offices and certainly not outside their houses, because it is incredibly intimidating. And it's not as if, you know, that they aren't already on alert and nervous, and some of them wearing flak jackets.
Yeah, that's, you know, that goes, but there are sort of two things from James Clover today. On the one hand, stop you protesting. On the other hand, £31 million of public money being spent on protecting MPs and bodyguards and all that. But I don't know how you don't do that.
Well, you've got to protect people going about their business. I don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, two MPs murdered in the space since when, Joe Cox of 2016. In 8 years, out of only 650 of them, that's going to, percentage-wise, that's kind of a lot. I mean, obviously, any would be too many, and others being threatened. There was a guy injured, wasn't there, as well?
Yeah.
With the samurai sword, was it? That was a while back,
but also,
wasn't
it? Also, it goes back to that whole thing of maybe because, like, in America, you know, politicians are treated as, like, not celebrities, but, you know, they have huge entourages of staff and security, and that scene has been part of the job. Because we sort of feel like MPs should suffer the whole time, that they shouldn't be claiming for, you know, travel, or they should, you know, all that
more that if you look at the security, so, you know, both Rob and I do a lot of interviews, but, you know, interviewing the MPs, it's completely different. Some of them have like 5 or 6 locks on their doors, particularly the women. You know, you have some really dangerous situations. You know, some of them have stalkers coming out. Quite a few of them have people in jail who actually stalk them. And then you've also got that sense that, you know, I remember one of them saying to me that when they went on the tube, they never stood near the edge of the line just in case someone pushed them over. And that's really frightening. Or they never wear heels, the women, because they think they might have to run. I mean, that just shouldn't be happening. So I think that's what I feel most sorry for, the MPs. I mean, I think a lot of the times they're behaving egregiously, and some of the behaviour is appalling. But actually how they're treated, I think, is the worst part of the job, and is meaning that a lot of people won't become MPs, don't you think? I mean,
Totally. We've talked about this many times, haven't we? How the quality is going down, and how many people are stepping down because they just, it's not worth it anymore, and they've got to think of their families and their own health. I think we have created a climate in this country of a sort of slightly anti-democratic climate. You know, I always come back to Brenda from Bristol. Oh no, not another one! And she celebrates as a kind of popular heroine. And I think, well, elections are a good thing. Yeah. People fought to have elections. Most of the world either doesn't have elections or has corrupt ones. And our elections are pretty much not uncorrupt. And we should celebrate that and celebrate the people who want to be a part of that democratic process.
You know, everyone complains about, oh, we've had, how many prime ministers we have without having an election? You know, Theresa May became prime minister and then sought her own mandate. Yes. That sort of thing we're always being told.
Quite.
We quite like to have that.
Yeah, and we moan and moan and moan and moan, and then 30% of people turn out in local elections, or even in a massive by-election that we were all talking about last week. It was 38% turnout.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's 2 out of every 3 voters, pretty much, not bothering to vote, but I bet they're all having a moan.
Yeah.
And they all do online as well. So I think that's the problem for MPs, is you're constantly having this bombardment online. And then if offline as well, you're nervous and you're worried. You wouldn't want, if you had a family, to go into politics now, would you? You'd be too worried about what happened to your children. And you don't want your children to see you being harassed the whole time. And you don't want to feel that you can't go into your constituency and talk to people.
Yeah.
But some of this is in the gift of politicians, because they all do it. Like David Cameron did it before 2010, when he went on about how he was going to do away with ministerial cars. And we saw virtue of Vince Cale and Ed Davey coming in on the bus.
Yeah.
Like, well, they're running government departments.
Yeah.
You know, Rishi Sunak should fly around the country in a helicopter. But he's suggesting the Prime Minister has nothing better to do than sit on a train for, you know.
It
probably doesn't work.
Yeah.
Look, we obviously want him to sort the train out.
Yeah.
But if we were told the Prime Minister was going to do nothing all day because he was catching the train to Edinburgh and back, we'd think that was a ridiculous way to carry
it. Yes, yeah, it's absurd. And
the Labour Party fall into that.
Yes.
You know, they always make going on about his helicopter. Yeah. I guarantee if Keir Starmer becomes Prime Minister, he will use a helicopter. Yeah. He should.
On the other hand, it's quite good if they do sometimes go around and use public transport, because they might actually talk to someone. And that's what I liked about the British system, which I didn't when I was in America, is that you never get near anyone in America because they do have this huge entourage, whereas actually you could actually go and chat. So you know, you could go and talk to someone. We were just talking about John Prescott. You know, you could go up to John Prescott and tell him what you thought, and he'd tell you what he thought. And that's great. That is really good for democracy if you can actually chat.
But the problem is that the discourse now is that people go up and threaten all sorts of MPs, which is why they don't want to do it anymore. And actually the upshot of it all is they're going to become more detached.
Mm.
From people. Be interesting. Well, we'll see how all that unfolds. I don't know what to do about that. We need to talk about tweakments, Robert.
Yeah.
You're not going to go full Simon Cowell? You don't need to.
No, not the full Simon Cowell. No, I'm not going to. I was just trying to be vaguely sympathetic to Simon Cowell's predicament.
What are you going to have?
That remains to be seen because
so those of us who were watching Saturday Night Takeaway,
yes,
it was quite surprising, particularly because they were rerunning and they'd pranked him 20 years ago,
yes,
and the contrast in the footage was striking.
Yes, I mean he's had a lot of work, and he has admitted himself a couple of years ago that maybe he'd overdone it slightly. Maybe he still is overdoing it. I can see how that might become addictive, particularly when he's on television every day of his life, especially when he's alongside people, well, half or now one third of his age, who are probably really good looking if they're on TV. So it's not something that I find particularly appealing, but I was just trying to put myself in his shoes, I suppose.
But we think Matt has, because you've got a very smooth forehead.
That's the moisturiser.
No, I moisturise.
We talked
every
about
day.
His moisturising regime.
Moisturise every day.
I think about treatments is that we all, probably most of us, would still kind of draw the line at, you know, actual going under the knife.
Yeah.
But a tweakment, which is a non-surgical
cosmetic
procedure, that is on a sliding scale with your moisturising regime, isn't it?
Well, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Or having a nice spa day.
Or getting your teeth done.
Getting your teeth done.
Yeah.
Or Jurgen Klopp having his hair done, or Wayne Rooney, or whoever, you know. I don't know, we shouldn't be too judgmental about him. But the point is, it didn't really make him look great. The cheek thing is the one that gets me, because I don't see what's so great about having kind of big,
really big lips are weird, don't they? Because you know it's happened, so you think the whole point is that no one actually quite knows whether you've had anything done.
Yeah, that's but you do it. with the trout pout, you do.
You really do, and actually it just looks odd, doesn't it?
Yeah. But if we're really honest, if we had the money and we had a surgeon who was going to make us look at 5 years younger without looking like we'd
had it done,
we'd all be a bit tempted, wouldn't we? That's all I was saying.
It's just worrying, because then you think it might all slip when you get older.
Well, that's the problem. Then you have to have more and more done to try and do the repairs.
Yes. Yeah.
And before you
know it, it's probably best not to start. Yeah, but then you can see why people do.
Stop it before it starts. Just say no.
Also, there's a serious point, I think, regarding women. A lot of women in their 40s and 50s, because of essentially double standards about how people look, I think they're
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly 3/4 of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once, or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Doing these things absolutely routinely now, to look younger and to be
taken seriously. When you get these 18 to 20 year olds, so you get really young ones, and then very young Generation Alpha, who are sort of under 14, who are all using those creams and potions and are obsessed by it, and they're obsessed by anti-aging. And you think, if you're obsessed by anti-aging at eight, you've kind of had it,
and get it as a sort of 18th or 21st birthday present.
Well, we're going to talk more about young people in a minute and whether or not they need therapy or just to pull themselves together. Let's turn attention to Alice's column, which I thought was excellent today. Gen Z need life lessons more than therapy. It was a very good column, which goes through the scale of the number of young people who are on antidepressants, those who say they need sick leave. And it ends, I'm just going to read the whole thing, Alice, just because, not the whole column, just the last paragraph, because I think it makes an interesting point for us to jump off from. We also need to teach children that some stress is normal, that life isn't going to be easy, that sad stuff happens, and it's how you cope that matters, that you're not a victim if you take full responsibility for your future, that it's normal to feel uncertain and confused at times in your teens and 20s, that going to work when you're feeling low can be helpful, that seeing colleagues and contributing are good distractions and may boost your self-worth. Your company and your country might also appreciate it.
Well, the problem is that you don't want to say don't have any therapy and they're all just whinging too much. But on the other hand, with you look at that generation and a lot of them are having therapy and you just wonder whether they all need it. And what tipped me was there's a very good new book that's come out called Bad Therapy by Abigail Schreier. And she has done a lot of research in America where over 40% of children now have a therapist. And it's actually made them less happy. I mean, they're even less happy than our children are. And they have a lot of interventions and they have far more drugs over there for them. So a lot more on antidepressants. And you think, actually, we've just gone too far, really, that maybe we should start saying to children, it's not all about therapy. That's not going to be the solution. We're going to have to actually change your lives and you're going to have to get out and do something.
Because and again, this is no way to play. You know, there is a serious problem with people with serious mental health problems who can't get the support they need. But also part of the beauty of being children is that something's a massive drama and it's forgotten about the next day. The whole point is you sort of move on and you're quite easily distracted by school or college or whatever, friends.
And you don't...
Not then, wallowing.
And you don't, pick the scab, as it were.
And you also do need to know it's going to be quite difficult, don't you? So that actually when you leave uni or you leave school, bad stuff does happen. I mean, it's like your 20s can be quite messy, it is quite difficult quite often. You're not going to find the ideal place, even though it's still harder for them in many ways because it's very hard to find somewhere to rent and that you've got cost of living crisis. That on top of that, we all had various moments.
I think my 20s was probably my unhappiest decade by some distance, actually, because everything prior to that, your life is pretty mapped out and you're in a structure. I mean, if you go to college, you're in a structure until you're 21, 22. And then suddenly you're not.
And that uncertainty is enough to sort of discombobulate you. So, well, let's bring in Kenneth Baker, Lord Baker, former Education Secretary from 1986 to 1989. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I've been listening to your discussion. Very interesting.
What do you make of this? How much of concern about mental health was there when you were Education Secretary?
Well, the problem is simply this. There are lots of 13 and 14-year-olds in school today who don't want to go to school, who are totally turned off by it because they're not learning anything useful. And so 12 years ago, I created new types of technical schools. We had 300 in 1945. They were closed because of snobbery, a huge mistake. Germany still has technical schools. That's one of the reasons why they're richer than we are. And the schools that I founded, there's now 44 of them. They're public free schools for 14 to 18-year-olds. And they teach skills as well as academic subjects. All schools have to now do 8 Gove academic subjects, which are 2 English, 1 maths, 3 science, 1 foreign language, history or geography. Academic subject, that's a grammar school curriculum. It's word for word the curriculum of 1904, a year in which people had to walk in front of cars with a red flag. And I discovered that this was no good at all for most schools, and therefore I've created technical schools for 14 to 18-year-olds. We've got 44 with 20,000 students, and we give them skills.
And we have some of the best. Are they happier as a result?
Some of the best destination, because we take children at 14, some of whom have got quite a lot of mental problems, actually. They don't want to go to school. But in our curriculum, for 2 days of the week, they're working in a workshop or in a computer design room or visiting a business. They're learning with their hands as well as their brains. And as a result, we have astonishing results. A quarter of our students become advanced apprentices at 18. Do you know how much an advanced apprentice get paid? They're paid a £20,000 a year by the car companies. The Navy will pay £35,000 a year for someone who has one A-level and a technical qualification. And we produce a lot of those. A quarter of our students become apprentices,
and so compared to only
3% in schools.
Kenneth, can I just ask, do you think it's about actually people finding the thing that they enjoy in life? A life worth, a sense of life satisfaction?
Yes, it's all of that. They're learning with their hands. They get confident. When companies approach us, they say they want children at 18 who are business friendly, who understand. And the first thing they ask for, have they worked in teams? In a normal school, you don't work in teams. In my schools, my colleges, there are teams all the time of five working on a project which has been provided by a local company.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton there, and of course you can read them in the Times every week with your subscription. Find it at thetimes.co.uk. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
Tim Shipman's here. Now, Tim, this time last week, it was a bit dull and then it all kicked off just as we'd finished.
Yes, I mean, well, if you want predictions, I think they're pretty much the same as what we thought might have happened last week. We've got the Rochdale by-election this week. We've got Lee Anderson kicking off all over the shop. We've got a budget coming up. There's lots and lots of things that they can both have a go at. I don't think it's going to be possible to sort of close it down like Starmer managed to last week.
So, did you watch... So, Ed Vasey's also here, Lord Vasey of Times Radio and Didcot. Did you watch PMQs last week? Do you normally...
No, I never watched PMQs.
Don't you?
No.
Did you used to go when you were...
No, I never went when I was an MP either.
Did you ever ask a question at PMQs?
Yes, of course.
So how did you ask a question if you weren't there?
Well, it was a disaster, my question. So I got a very first, very early question on in 2005 when I was when Blair was Prime Minister, and it was just when Cameron was doing the whole end of Punch and Judy politics.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to ask about healthcare in Oxfordshire, which was actually weirdly under a Labour government having its budgets cut. And I stood up, and in a consensual fashion, I'd even rung Downing Street to tell them I was going to ask a question about healthcare. I stood up and I said, we have many fine doctors and nurses in Oxfordshire. And a Northern Labour MP shouted, we agree with you, lads, you can sit down now. And the whole place collapsed in laughter, cue Tim Shipman and you, and nobody heard my question.
Right.
And Blair just patronised me, and that was the last time I tried it.
Well, and therein lies the danger.
And I used to go to David Cameron's PMQ's prep to begin with, and I completely missed the point of it because I just sort of sat there silently because obviously Michael Gove dominated the whole proceedings. And of course, what I didn't realise, it was basically an ambitious MP's.
Yeah, you were supposed to be showing off it.
An ambitious MP would have spent Monday and Tuesday morning prepping like crazy and then
prepping for
gone
the prep.
In Tuesday afternoon and wowed Cameron with 75 different jokes. and eventually become Chancellor of the Exchequer. But that didn't
and then
happen.
Instead of joining the cabinet, you just had the best job in government for years and years and years and years and
right.
years.
Just get my head down.
And he's still doing it now, just wandering around, hoovering up tickets. Well, after PM, if you for those who missed it last week, PMQs last week, Keir Starmer asked almost all of his questions about the technicalities of what did and didn't go on at the post office and who did and didn't tell whom to go slow or otherwise. And actually contacted somebody in Keir Starmer's PMQ's prep team to say basically what on earth was that all about. And they said they wanted to get some distance between Rishi Sunak and Kevin Badenoch, who was obviously the one who was having the row with the post office man. And they thought it'd be a good idea to mix up the tone and style a bit and to also stop Rishi Sunak from using all of his Tory rousing stuff pre-written about the by-elections and all of that.
Well, and we did call it right, didn't we?
Yeah. But it didn't make for... they said, but don't worry, the horrendous jokes will return.
It gave me a hook to write about the leadership plotting and infighting at the weekend.
Yes.
The fact that the leader of the opposition was going after the putative front runner.
Exactly right, which is quite interesting.
You know, from that point of view, interesting it was not an entirely wasted session.
But obviously, then what happened, mere hours after PMQs, was the enormous row over the motion to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza put down by the SNP, which the government get to put down an amendment because that's the rules. Then the Labour Party wants to put down its own amendment, which normally isn't called, but after Keir Starmer went to see Lindsay Hoyle, he said he would call that amendment. All hell broke loose. Since then, over 80 MPs have called for Lindsay Hoyle to
86,
go.
86? I think, actually, arguably, the most interesting thing is going to be seeing how the Hoyle performs today.
Exactly. Will he be quite so keen to
intervene and tell everybody off?
And actually, Stephen Flynn, leader of the SNP in Westminster, was in the chair where you're sitting right now, Tim, just yesterday. And I tried to ask about where it's going to go. And he says they're going to keep up the fight. They want him gone. They think he's lost the control of the House. I pointed out to him that I'd noticed some SNP MPs were wearing ties in the Commons. They were clapping. They were doing all the things that normally Lindsay Hoyle tells them not to. But will they keep doing that to try and undermine his... So there's a lot to go.
Be interesting to see if they do that in PMQs.
In PMQs, exactly. Will he... You know, we should be braced, I think, also for a possible walkout. That's the obvious thing to do, is to get up at the precise moment and all walk out and cause some sort of chaos. So here we go, then. We kick off, as ever, with Keir Starmer. We go live to the House of Commons. This is question number one.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I join with the Prime Minister in his remarks about Lord Cormac and Ronnie Campbell? A Tory MP spent last week claiming that Britain is run by a shadowy cabal made up of activists, the deep state, and most chillingly of all, the Financial Times.
This is Liz Truss he's talking
about. At what point did his party give up on governing and become the political wing of the Flat Earth Society?
Mr. Speaker... Another week where the Honourable Member is just sniping from the sidelines because he has absolutely nothing that he can say what we do. What we're getting on with, Mr. Speaker, is delivering on the people's priorities. The number of small boats down by a third, Mr. Speaker. NHS performance improving, inflation continuing to fall. And Mr. Speaker, not only that, we're delivering a significant tax cut for millions of working Britons. While his incoherent energy plans would put taxes up for everyone across the country.
Well, there we are. A not bad...
Back to the game as usual. Yes.
But actually, a good demonstration now, precisely what Labour worry about, is if you do ask basically a clever dick question, there is a risk that all you actually get is a party political broadcast.
That's true, but the really clever dick questions are not clever dick questions. They're just awkward questions that cause mischief and disquiet. So, interesting, though, that Sunak again ducked the opportunity to say, I'm different from that Liz Truss woman, who's the one who's torpedoed my party's credibility on the economy. I disagreed with her on all of that. I, funnily enough, disagree with her on this. And, you know, it still shows a Prime Minister who's slightly worried about his right flank, that he feels he can't even put the boot into someone who, I think, 80% of his MPs thought made an absolute prize banana of themselves last week.
But, I mean, it does give her the chance to come back. I mean, rather like Nadine Dorries, I hate to obviously put them in the same category. It's very disrespectful to...
To who?
Nadine Dorries. But, you know, Liz Truss obviously is trying to kind of position herself in a slightly bizarre way.
She seems to be running for vice president at the moment.
To make herself very prominent. And so this will give her a chance to come back and say, you know, no, what I'm saying is correct. This is all right, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I also do think, you know, Rishi Sunak is right, you know, and he should have been doing this from the beginning of his premiership, just saying, these are the things I'm getting on with. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with his five priorities and whether he's going to get driven into a cul-de-sac on those. But he just says, look, I'm doing a job here. I'm doing it well. You know, what have you got to say, Labour? Which is, you know, and it is difficult for Labour because all they can say is, well, we don't know what the economy is going to look like in 6 months' time, et cetera, et cetera.
But also, I suppose the point about that particular question is, when did you become the political wing of the Flat Earth Society? It's not actually putting anyone under any pressure. It'd be interesting to see if he goes as far as saying, you've taken the whip off Lee Anderson. Mm. Why don't you do the same for Liz Truss? Because then his answer might be more instructive. Let's go back to the comments. Question number two from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, his predecessor spent last week in America trying to flog her new book. In search of fame and wealth, she's taken to slagging off they made her Prime Minister, now they can't bear talking about her. In search of fame and wealth, she's taken to slagging off and undermining Britain at every opportunity. She claimed that as Prime Minister she was sabotaged by the deep state. She also remained silent as Tommy Robinson, that right-wing thug, was described as a hero. Why is he allowing her to stand as a Tory MP at the next election?
Well predicted, Mr. Chorley.
Mr. Speaker, I don't believe a single member of this House supports Tommy Robinson, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, if he wants to talk about former leaders and predecessors, the whole country knows his record because he sat there while anti-Semitism ran rife in this party and not once but twice backed a man who called Hamas friends, Mr. Speaker. But to their credit, the Shadow Chancellor, the Shadow Home Secretary and indeed the Shadow Foreign Secretary refused to back the former Labour leader. But he didn't, because he's spineless, hopeless and utterly shameless.
Game on, people.
Yeah.
I think there might be a general election this year, you know.
But, well, you predicted it, Matt. He called on Liz Truss to have the whip taken away, but he has come back with the Jeremy Corbyn rejoinder. And actually, I wonder if Liz Truss is in the chamber. And I also wonder whether, seeing Angela Rayner obviously sitting next to Keir Starmer, whether the Prime Minister will seek to raise that issue, which has been playing obviously in the press this week about her council
house. About the council house of the Mail on Sunday, which she bought her council house and then wants to limit the ability of other people to do the same thing.
I mean, if it's just basically a smear fest.
It does appear to be.
Who knows what's going to come out in the next...
The interesting thing about this, though, is that last week both leaders almost decided and kind of mutually agreed not to have a fight. This week, they kind of both know they've got problems behind them, but Sunak's gone for anti-Semitism, knowing that Starmer's going to come back about Islamophobia. And
I presume he'll come back and say, I kicked him out of my party.
Yes.
Yeah. All you've Why won't you do the same?
Suspended the whip.
Yeah.
You know. But, yeah, they both seem to want to have a proper dust-up. So, I mean, obviously there'll be people out there who will say this is another regrettable example of more heat than light, and others will say they're glad they tuned in again this week.
Well, let us know what you think. 0333 003 2353 is the WhatsApp, or you can join the comments, the chat on the YouTube channel. Let's go, as Greg says, at least Starmer had the bottle to kick Corbyn out. Tom says, is attacking a former party leader such a smart move? Well, let's go back to the comments. I think question three from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, I've changed my party for the better. He is being changed by his party. The reason he's letting her stand is because he's too weak to do anything about it. It's the story of his leadership. When they refuse to accept any blame for the ruin of the last 14 years, you do wonder who they think has been running the country all this time. Thankfully, the former Prime Minister's on hand again to help. It turns out it's all the fault of the media, the corporate world, and bizarrely, the President of the United States. Winston Churchill once said, the price of greatness is responsibility. Now, I don't think the British public are expecting greatness from this Prime Minister, just a bit of accountability. so doesn't think it would be great if just for once the Tories actually took some responsibility.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about leadership, he talks about change, but when I learnt of something that I didn't agree with, I suspended one of my MPs straight away. But when he, but Mr. Speaker, when he learnt of vile anti-Semitic remarks made by a Labour candidate, what did he do, Mr. Speaker? He instructed his team to defend him. He sent a shadow cabinet minister to campaign for him, and he personally backed him for days. And that's the difference between us. I act on my principles. He hasn't got any.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's punchy stuff. And look, the Tories can read the focus groups and the sort of intimate polling as well as anybody, and they know people are still not convinced by Starmer. People still don't know what Starmer stands for. And the concern about Starmer is that, you know, he keeps changing his mind, and does he have any of these principles? I mean, passing the Prime Minister's answer a little bit there, saying that he suspended Lee Anderson immediately is a little bit generous, because there was a quote from Tory Central Office effectively backing him prior to the decision to suspend him. But, you know, he's right. Starmer took 48 hours to get rid of his candidate in Rochdale, and we'll see the outcome of that on Thursday.
I mean, the implication is Lee Anderson said something he disagreed with. I suspended him immediately. The implication is that he doesn't disagree with Liz Truss. If you follow the logic of that, if someone says something which I think is unacceptable, I withdraw the whip immediately. He's therefore...
Yes, well, maybe this is Chorley prediction time again. Maybe if Keir Starmer is fast on his feet, he'll come back with exactly that point, saying, well, you've suspended Lee Anderson because you disagreed with him, but you haven't suspended Liz Truss. Do you agree with her then? But then it becomes a bit torturous for the viewer, unless you're completely sort of a Westminster Village aficionado.
I think Sunak probably thinks what Lee Anderson said was sort of wrong and dangerous, and what Liz Truss has said is just stupid and doesn't require him to have an opinion on it.
Not a brilliant question from Keir Starmer then? A weird Churchill
they've all been sort of open-ended. They've been questions that are taunts and have just left it free for Sunak to come back. There's been nothing awkward that he's had to answer or had to dodge.
But they would have been pleased with the Winston Churchill quote, the Labour team, because they obviously love quoting Tories back at Tories and Tories for the right-wing press. So, you know, they'll bring out Margaret Thatcher, Winston Churchill whenever they can.
Yeah. Well, let's go. This is PMQ's Unpacked with Matt Chorley, joined by Tim Shipman and Ed Vasey. Let's go back to the Commons question number four.
I can't believe he's saying it with a straight face. The former Prime Minister continued on her American odyssey. This journey into the wild west of her mind. She also claimed, Mr. Speaker, that Nigel Farage is the man to restore the Tory party. Can the Prime Minister confirm whether he too would welcome Mr. Farage back into the Tory fold?
We have a proud tradition of diversity and accepting everyone from every background. Indeed, it is a proud record that puts Labour to shame, Mr. Speaker. This is the party that delivered the first Jewish Prime Minister, the first female Prime Minister, the first black Chancellor, the first Muslim Home Secretary, and now led by the first British Asian Prime Minister. Well, it seems he can only champion men from North London. It's the Conservatives that represent modern Britain, Mr. Speaker.
Well, it's an interesting answer.
He's rehabilitated Kwasi Kwarteng.
Well, he's rehabilitated. He's also appearing to leave the door open to a boy from Dulwich College, you know, who scrapped his way up to fight his way back into
Will
the
you
Conservative
welcome
Party.
Nigel Farage back into the Conservative Party with a list of the Conservatives' proud history of diversity?
Yeah. Well, you know, they probably haven't had a genuine cigarette smoker for quite some time on the front bench.
Yes. We have the first Home Secretary who chain smokes for 20 years. He could have said, I suppose, Nigel Farage would never dream of, you know, he would dream of joining the Labour Party, but I don't know if that would have landed well. But, he didn't. He dodged the question.
Well, look, I mean, the people who want Lee Anderson back also would quite like Nigel Farage in the party. So yeah. I think what he's done there is probably not sort of deliberately go out of his way to annoy them.
What do you think, Ed, having been inside the Tory party? Well, you are still, you're a Conservative peer.
Yes.
Theoretically. I mean, on paper at least.
Thanks, Tim.
Is there any real prospect of Nigel Farage returning to the Conservative Party, and or is this just a basically nonsense because he likes being in the news and people talking about him? And
it all depends on the election result. I don't think there's any prospect of him joining the Conservative Party before the election. I think there's every chance of him rejoining Reform, as it were, and leading that from the front into the election and causing a lot of damage to the Conservative Party. And I suspect his mindset is that if he succeeds and the Tory party loses the next election and loses badly, the way is open for a kind of takeover. Because if you've got people like Suella Braverman and so on then jostling for the leadership, then there might be a Tory leader in opposition who would welcome Nigel Farage back and indeed give him quite an important role.
Somebody just texted in saying Ed Vasey's too nice for the nasty party.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So it's coming from your number, though, so I'm not sure how that works.
Well, if Nigel Farage gets back, you might find that Ed is suddenly a crossbencher.
Yeah. Or a bishop. Right, let's go back to the House of Commons there. This is what we're now to question number five from Keir Starmer.
So this diverse Tory party just welcomed Nigel Farage, the Prime Minister, two months ago, the Prime Minister said, the Tory party is a broad church. I welcome lots of people who want to subscribe to our ideals and our values. This is the same Nigel Farage who said he agreed with the basic premise of Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech and bemoaned the influence of the Jewish lobby. So is the Prime Minister simply too scared to stand up to the gaggle of Tory MPs who moonlight as GB presenters? Or does he genuinely think Nigel Farage shares the ideals and values of the Tory party?
Mr. Speaker, he wants to talk about values, but tomorrow in Rochdale, the people will have a choice of three former Labour candidates, two of which are anti-Semites, Mr. Speaker. The truth is, his party is so mired in hate that despite three ex-Labour candidates standing, he can't back a single one of them, Mr. Speaker. It's because we expel anti-Semites, he makes them Labour candidates.
That's harsh. That's not sitting on the fence there.
Pretty ballsy stuff.
I'd be interested to see what the numbers are on this and where, you know, how popular is having a go at anti-Semitism versus how popular is it having a go at Islamophobia. Genuinely don't know the answer, but they clearly think that trying to make it look like Starmer has not changed his party after all. Because I think if you'd gone back 6 months, what people would have said about Starmer is he got rid of the hard left and the anti-Semites. He's got them in a sort of more responsible position on the economy, but he's a bit dull and he hasn't really told us what he's going to do. And the third bit was the bit they were focusing on. But the Tories are now having a decent go at attacking point one and putting that back in play in people's minds. And, you know, that may have an effect electorally.
And who do you think Starmer is wanting to appeal to by raising the spectre of Farage rejoining the Conservative Party, because there'll be plenty of Tory voters who would welcome the prospect, potentially?
Well, look, he's putting off the blue wall voters in the South who might vote Lib Dem and hand a bunch of seats to the Labour Party, and I think he's also trying to just sow discord between the Tory front bench
and the
Tory red wall, which isn't quite coterminous, not exactly the same thing. Yeah. And, you know, the more divisions you can sow over this Lee Anderson thing, that's probably worthwhile because it keeps Sunak distracted with internal party management matters rather than, you know, actually making any progress and making the argument that you've been saying he should make, that, look, we're doing all these things. If he spends half his day worrying about this kind of stuff, then it's going to be less straightforward.
And actually, talking up Reform, if you look at the polls, of the 2019, the people who voted Conservative in 2019, more of them are going to Reform than going to Labour at the moment.
Yes.
So, you know, actually, it's in Starmer's interest to keep that.
Well, and also having them prominent gives them more support.
Exactly.
Because they look more credible. And if you actually look at what, you know, you talk to a pollster, some pollsters prompt for Reform when they ask you who you're going to back, and some say the three main parties and then the other, and then they break. If you say other, they then offer you the Reform. And the difference between prompting and not prompting is about 3 percentage points, according to the pollsters I speak to. So the very act of having them prominent publicly boosts their following.
We'll see what difference that will make. Lots of people pointing out not a peep from Lindsay Hoyle today.
No,
even though it's been quite lively. and a lot of noise. It's just been left to Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer to wait for the noise to abate. Let's go back to the House of Commons, Anna. This is question number six from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the truth is these are no longer the Tories your parents voted for, and the public can see it. The Prime Minister has lost control of his party to the hordes of records of malcontents, the tinfoil hat brigade over there, the extremists who wreck the economy, all lining up to undermine him, humiliate him, and eventually to get rid of him. When will he ever stand up to them and end the pathetic spectacle of a Tory party that used to try and beat Nigel Farage, now giving up and dancing to his tune instead?
Mr. Speaker, utterly shameless from someone who stood by while anti-Semitism ran rife in his party, oversaw the appalling situation in Rochdale and twice backed the member for Islington North. And in the last few homes, Mr. Speaker, last few weeks, we've seen members of Parliament's homes surrounded, their events disrupted, council meetings threatened, and just last week we saw the very rules that govern this place abused because of intimidation, Mr. Speaker. While he might want to bend to mob rule, we will face down the extremists and stand up for British values.
Well, that's very interesting as well, isn't it? Because that's almost saying more politely what Lee Anderson said very impolitely. So he's trying to... There's a bit of Johnsonism creeping in here.
Starmer in the same box as the Islamic extremists and saying that Starmer somehow takes some responsibility for the intimidation of MPs. And I'm not sure the whole Starmer attack worked because it was slightly all over the place. I mean, it was a series of attacks on Tory divisions, but there was no kind of narrative or cumulative, you know, crescendo to this point. I mean, he tried, but because we'd darted around with Liz Truss and Lee Anderson, I would have probably focused more on Lee Anderson myself.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's more of a live issue because, as Tim said earlier, it's kind of Lee Anderson was a kind of serious kind of political intervention which causes all sorts of problems, whereas Liz Truss is just slightly away
it's
with
a bit
the fairies.
Of comic light relief,
that's
isn't
how
it,
the
really?
Public view.
Yeah.
But what he didn't at any point come back with Keir Starmer was very straightforward. I kicked Jeremy Corbyn out.
Yeah, he didn't say it.
Why won't you do the same? And then sit down again. Don't give him a chance to turn the page
exactly.
to his next thing.
Yeah.
One word I think I've written down at least twice, if not three times, is shameless.
Yeah. Utterly shameless. And the line earlier was spineless, hopeless, shameless. You know, I mean, it's obviously punchy rhetoric, but I suspect that that is a word that various members of the public have used in focus groups, and they've thought, well, we're going to keep throwing that back at him.
Sunak has only ever used the word shameless once. In December last year, he accused someone of typical shameless opportunism. That was talking about Keir Starmer, but that was just before Christmas.
That's a brilliant piece of research. It's like being on the radio with two football pundits. I mean, you're like one of those cold days who say, you know, the last time Manchester United scored from that particular position at that minute was in 1953.
You've got it all before we can start drawing on the screen.
It's absolutely brilliant. But I suspect also, by the way, that the Prime Minister believes it. I suspect if you were privately in the room with him preparing for PMQs, he would be saying, this is ridiculous. You know, I've got problems. But for Starmer to go on this when he backed Jeremy Corbyn twice to be Prime Minister and then to stand up straight-faced and say that somehow my party tolerates Islamophobia because of Lee Anderson's remarks, it's shameless. He probably does believe that.
Yeah, I think he probably does. And interestingly, when Johnson and then Sunak started using the sort of Corbyn line, because the narrative was that Starmer basically dealt with this stuff, it didn't really land. And I think you and I felt it was a bit daft and a bit retro. And it feels to me like it's got legitimate fresh life now.
And it was interesting what Rishi Sunak did by peeling off Rachel Weaves, the Shadow Chancellor,
David Lammy,
Shadow Foreign Secretary, those people, Yvette Cooper, Shadow Home Secretary, who refused to serve under Jeremy Corbyn and were very publicly critical of him.
Yep.
There is a difference there, and I don't think that Keir Starmer is ever fully accounted for. his decision to carry on serving someone who he now thinks.
I think his
honest
answer would be, "I stuck around so I could be leader of the Labour Party and change it."
Yeah,
which is a bit shameless and a bit opportunistic. But
and also potentially
and
to
if
limit
someone
the
hadn't kind of won the leadership, Rachel Reeves and Yvette Cooper and I would not be sitting on that front bench.
It's also interesting that the Prime Minister didn't use, you know, Lindsay's troubles from last week to say, you know, you're trying to make out that I've got a divided party. You know, you have to basically lean on the Speaker to get a motion to try and unite your party because it's so divided.
That's really interesting. It's really interesting. Because the Keir Starmer thing, he was asked by Anoushka Astana for ITV documentary, why did you go around the country campaigning for Jeremy Corbyn? You now say it was beyond the pale. And he said, basically, he didn't think the Labour Party was in a position to win. And so essentially his inability to persuade anyone to vote Labour was so...
Reminds me of when I went round the country with Ian Duncan Smith.
But let's be honest, what people like Starmer and others were saying on the doorstep was, this bloke can't win, so you don't need to worry about him. Vote for me because I'm your local candidate and we need to have as many good Labour MPs as possible.
That I think is OK
but
for the
backbench
right, MP.
He's never been honest enough to have that conversation with the country.
He was putting himself forward to be in Jeremy Corbyn's government, which is very different. Lots of talk about the Rochdale by-election, so let me just give you the candidates. Azhar Ali was the Labour candidate, is now independent. Mark Coleman is independent. Simon Danchuk is Reform UK. Ian Donaldson's Liberal Democrat. Paul Ellison is Conservative. George Galloway, Workers' Party of Britain. Michael Howarth, independent. William Howarth, independent. Guy Otten, Green Party. Raven Rodent-Sabortner from the official Monster Waving Loony Party. And David Tully is another independent. And obviously that by-election taking place on Thursday. We'll have all the fallout from that on Times Radio on Friday. Obviously you can catch Ed Vasey here on a Friday.
Yes.
What can we expect from your show this week?
7 o'clock in the evening. Stella Creasy is going to come on, do my week in Westminster.
Very good.
And I think I've got Rocco Forte, the hotelier, coming
off
on.
Off the hotels?
CEO of the week.
Very good. Any live music?
Not that I'm aware of.
Do you drink on air?
Occasionally. I had a gin and tonic last week.
Did you? Yeah.
My producer felt I needed one. Well, you have a wine club on a Friday.
Sometimes on Fridays we do wine tasting. We haven't done it for a while. The last time I did it, I spilt wine everywhere. Are we ready to do the best? Oh, here she is. Lava coming?
You've only ever offered me cheese.
I know, but that was at the G7, wasn't it? We had cheese at the G7. Here she comes. Hang on, Lava needs a chair. Let's get Lava a chair. Here we are. It's all right, we're live on the radio, don't worry. At least you brought your book in.
That's my book.
It was your book.
It's John O'Farrell.
John O'Farrell, there we are.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why are there pigs on the front?
We are live. Lara, there's only one question I want to know. How good was Stephen Flynn?
He was pretty sober, actually.
What?
I think I'm afraid to say, for your
sake.
Probably
bigging it up.
I think on his part, he was keen to look sort of mature and magisterial and asked a question in a very
serious
way.
That's not your daddy's SNP either, is it?
No.
Clapping and walking out.
Well, that's what we want.
And there was only vague reference to the chaos of last week.
Well,
but it's still an important question.
We've got to have a listen to it anyway. Stephen Flynn, we've got Stephen Flynn. Here we go. This is Stephen Flynn.
Flynn. Mr. Speaker, we're now approaching 5 months since this conflict first began. And in that time, this House has equivocated and this government on 3 occasions at the United Nations has abstained when it could have voted for a ceasefire. Abstentionism is not leadership. So can I ask the Prime Minister, should this matter now come before the United Nations with a ceasefire potentially in sight, will he use his government's vote in order to deliver that ceasefire?
Yeah. Prime Minister. Well,
Mr. Speaker, we support the United States draft resolution that was discussed with colleagues at United Nations last week, but just calling for an immediate full ceasefire now, which collapses back into fighting within days or weeks, and indeed does not release hostages, including British hostages, is not in anyone's interest. We must work towards a permanent ceasefire, and that starts with an immediate humanitarian pause to get aid in and hostages out. I agree with the Honourable Gentleman about the suffering of the people in Gaza, and in this country, we should be proud of everything we are doing to help them and provide them the life-saving aid that they deserve.
That wasn't what I was expecting at all, Lara.
What were you expecting?
I was expecting him to try and reignite the whole way. He was in the studio yesterday, Stephen Flynn, you know, saying the battle goes on, he'd been lied to, and he was trying to save his own skin, and it's outrageous, and he's got to go. 86 MPs have backed the motion.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the risks with today's PMQs for him is actually that the two main parties aren't backing removing him from his post, and to do something publicly might actually backfire on him in this moment. There's also this question that he's facing around whether or not he's politicising this issue, and this was perhaps a good opportunity for him to ask something.
Rise above it. Because he didn't particularly like me pointing out that there was a lot of politics going on.
Did he not?
So do you think he changed his mind after coming on the Matt Chorley show?
I mean, it's happened before. Allegra Stratton, you remember her?
Yep.
Used to be the Prime Minister's...
Yeah.
Net Zero spokesman. Yeah. After she came on, she revealed that she had a Volvo, an old diesel Volvo. I gave her a hard time about it. The next time she came on, she got rid of it.
Oh, that's interesting. People change their cars and change their positions. But I do think it's right that Stephen Flynn, I think it's right that it's become, a lot of people think this is a Westminster insider row, MPs looking into themselves rather than talking about the issue. So he's saying, actually, I am a big man as well. I want to talk about the issue. That's why we had our motion. We'll continue to kind of harass the Speaker, but let's talk about the issue the SNP wanted to talk about before it all went tits
but
up.
I suppose, Tim, in a way, to any other party, if you just look like you're playing parliamentary games, it might count against you. But given that's the SNP's entire...
That's kind of their MO.
Yeah, really. And actually, the more you were pointing
and
out...
And actually, for their voters in Scotland, they kind of like that. They do think, this is the wicked imperial capital where nonsense occurs.
Yeah. I think it would have helped the SNP of Scotland, don't you?
I would have thought so. Which is why they did all these slightly curious things when, the humble Crofter was in charge. Yeah.
And, of course, that's why, Keir Starmer cannot be complacent, because if the SNP start to row back, it's not going to be helpful to him.
And actually, if you look then today, I mean, I think Stephen Flynn's ability to realise, now's the time to step back and all that, they have got a big fight on in Scotland, Labour, and it's not necessarily going to go all their way.
Exactly.
The SNP are still, they don't have Nicola Sturgeon, but they're still a smart political operation. And actually, Rishi Sunak, a reminder of it, PMQs, his response to Keir Starmer, the general election campaign is going to be dirty, and they will throw absolutely everything at Keir Starmer. And he... they're not going to give up just because the polls say they're going to lose.
No, I don't think they'll give up at all. No. I mean, the Tories, I think, have raised an enormous amount of money as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of people who are backing the Tories financially. I think they're going to outspend Labour in the election.
Yeah. Lara, where are we going next?
We are going to the Labour MP, Kevin Jones, next, who asks a question about the CEO of the Post Office and specifically whether or not Rishi Sunak has confidence in him following yesterday's business committee.
Oh, great. Let's take a listen.
Jones. After yesterday's revelation that Nick Reid, the CEO of the Post Office, is under investigation for an 80-page report written by the former head of HR at the Post Office, does the Prime Minister and Business Secretary have confidence in Nick Reid's leadership at the Post Office?
Mr. Speaker, it would clearly be inappropriate for me to comment on an investigation before it has been completed. Our focus remains working closely with the Post Office to ensure that it delivers justice for postmasters caught up in this historic scandal, and that's why we will imminently bring forward the legislation that we promised.
Shelley Smart.
That was it was a pretty extraordinary moment yesterday, that committee hearing, Tim.
Yeah, and that was a very non-committal answer.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was like the sort of centrally, it was non-committally non-committal. Because you can give a non-committal answer where you sort of hint that we're on their side or basically we're not on their side. And that was very much a kind of, don't drag me into this one, son, which suggests that they think it's awkward.
Was Nick Reid actually in the same room as the chairman of the Post Office at the Select Committee hearing when the chairman revealed it was Nick Reid under investigation?
No, I think he'd been up first, and then Henry Staunton came in afterwards. So,
And, of course, Kevin Jones is a long-time campaigner on this, so he has very great credibility in this, former Labour Defence Minister.
Yeah, proper old stager is Kevin.
He certainly is, and he's been campaigning on this issue for many, many years. In fact, I don't think there wasn't a lot that Rishi Sunak could say, because he is actually right. This guy's under investigation, innocent until proven guilty. Can't say I think this guy should go when he may be innocent.
But they got rid of Henry Staunton while the investigation was ongoing.
Well, the point was they got rid of Henry Staunton because they didn't think he was doing a good job as chairman. That's the line. And then Kemi Badenoch, whether wisely or not, decided to throw the entire kitchen sink at him and make this into a full-blown row, which could run and run.
He also ripped the taps out, smashed them around his head, and then got the water jet And shot it up his nose.
But that was pretty extraordinary yesterday. When it's not often that MPs are genuinely agog. And when he whipped out, he'd sort of laid out all of his sort of paperwork. Right. And he whipped out the fact that he was in an investigation. They were sort of genuinely taken aback and didn't know what to do.
Wasn't it Jonathan Gullis?
Yeah.
I can't remember what he said exactly, but I read it this morning.
It's probably something to do with chai latte.
I think it says I think he said, "You've blown my mind," or "This has blown my mind," or something to that effect. And you're right that revelations of that kind don't come across. But that picture that we now all associate with yesterday of Henry Staunton holding up a heavily redacted piece of paper and sort of waving it at the MPs, I think it's quite memorable.
But also, ultimately, the actual thing that needs to happen is people need to get their compensation. And whether or not someone told Henry Staunton to go slow, they have been going slow. And there is no doubt about that. And they're now talking about it would take years and years and years at this rate to get all the money out the door. And that ultimately is a political problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and Alan Bates is absolutely right. It's the same as the infected blood scandal. I mean, the trouble with these issues, you know, they're surrounded by lawyers saying, oh, you can't pay it out because, you know, it's not all the T's haven't been crossed, all the I's haven't been dotted. But you're right, mate, it's a political problem. The public is 100% behind the sub-postmasters. They want to see sub-postmasters paid, particularly those, you know, we know that people are dying without receiving any compensation.
Yeah. And it's a particular massive scandal issue with the blood one. People are literally dying all the time as a result of, you know, negligence that they deserve the money for.
Yeah. Well, see, if that's no answer on that one. Any more, Lara?
There's one more.
Yeah,
if I may.
Another one.
From Shailesh Vara, who is, of course, a Conservative MP. There were two questions about planning in Peterborough today, and this is the less boring of the two, but I think.
Two questions on Peterborough in PMQs.
The other one was Paul Bristow on a secondary school field, as far as I could understand, which actually had a lengthy response from Jacinda Ardern, which we won't be playing, but obviously, listeners, if they wish to, can listen back on Parliament Live. But this.
Sorry, I'm going to pop a note in my diary. Yeah, exactly. Paul Bristow's planning question.
This is, I think, quite a good illustration of the problem that anybody like Michael Gove has. Michael Gove currently shouting at Jeremy Hunt and others to provide some sort of bold issue measure on housing for young people in the budget or before the election has, which is questions like these from quite shamelessly NIMBY MPs to the effect of not wanting houses in their constituency. So have a listen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A few years ago, there was a proposal to build nearly 7,000 houses in a beautiful part of my constituency near the villages of Castor and Aylesworth, against the wishes of the local residents. I worked with the local community, and together we were able to stop this development. However, efforts are now being made to include this land in a revised Peterborough local plan. Would the Prime Minister agree with me that it is very important that the voice of the local community is heard and that it is unacceptable that developments can take place in this circuitous way, especially when there is other more suitable land available in and around the city of Peterborough?
My right honourable friend raises an important issue, and he's right that the local community should always have their voice heard. It's important that councils bring forward local plans, but this must be done in close consultation with local communities because their voices matter. As I understand it, the Peterborough local plan is still under preparation and there are opportunities to provide comments on the draft plan. So I encourage and commend my honourable friend for continuing to support his local community to make sure that their voice is heard.
Sir Owen.
Oh, housing.
Well,
this is where I become Stalinist. Build the homes. We need the homes.
I started thinking then. My mind slightly drifted. And the two men sitting behind Rishi Sunak have got the seem to have the same tie on.
Oh.
I don't know if it's a military thing.
Can we go back? I was too busy getting angry about house building.
Yeah, thanks so much, Matt, for caring so deeply about
the people of Peterborough are always my thoughts. It's easy to mock
Shailesh Vara. That is textbook. You're fighting your seat. I stopped the planning development. That's in the question. I stopped the planning development. Local residents don't want it. I'm with my local residents. There are other places in Peterborough, translation, other constituencies where this housing could
maybe
go.
Maybe Paul Bristow's.
Thanks very much.
There's a lovely...
On Paul Bristow's playing field, for example, you get at least half the houses.
But this is there... Will there ever be a tipping point where Tory MPs might accept some housing in their constituency?
No. I mean, there are no votes in supporting housing development. There are only votes in opposing.
Which is why we don't build enough houses.
Correct. Just so you know.
This is why you need planning reform.
This is why you need planning
reform. Yes, you need to take local councils out of planning, and you need to impose housing on areas because no...
Well, according to the Prime Minister, we need to make sure that local voices are heard.
Yes, well, unfortunately, when local voices are heard, they all say no.
Silence the local voices. Yeah. We need national five-year plans. It's very straightforward.
We did have,
and Rishi Sunak dropped them.
Yes. So, well, they weren't being hit either. And Labour never hits them either. I mean, this is the whole thing. This is one of the great, you know... I mean, we built HS2 about 40 years after we should have done.
Yeah.
As the case may be. Housing and building a third runway. These are dramatic, colossal, collective failures of the entire political class. It's absolutely pathetic. And for someone who's been covering it for 20 years, I'm more cynical about house building than any other subject.
Well, I think, you know, Rishi Sunak has put a planning barrister into the House of Lords.
A planning
barrister into the House of Lords?
Who's that?
Charles Banner, KC.
I'm not sure any good comes of putting barristers in the House of Lords.
Or indeed anyone.
Old friend of his.
Yeah, they were spotted at the cricket together,
that's
I think.
That's right. There we are.
Very nice. I teed it up, but they completely failed to hit the ball. That was pathetic. Two of the foremost political brains in British journalism. Completely missed the point.
Let me lighten the mood briefly, though.
Come on.
Prince Harry has lost his case against the Home Office, and James Hill of The Spectator has done a really fine tweet. Said, "Commiserations to Prince Harry on becoming the only person to ever launch an unsuccessful legal challenge against the Home Office."
Very good.
That is very good.
Very good. Dominic's been in touch. Dominic.
Oh, yes, Dominic. There are core texters to Times Radio, and they deserve special awards. And do they ever sleep? Because I do a Friday evening show, Dominic texts me.
Yeah.
Matt's lunchtime show. When I do Mariella's show, if I stand in, Dominic texts. I mean, they're on it. Dominic a great deal, by the way.
He's been in touch about...
Is this Dominic Grieve? Or?
No.
Then he's spelled Domenyk.
Right. Yep. And because I asked, do you have a drink when you're doing your show? Yeah. And you said you do occasionally. And he says, "Hello, Matt. It's not whether Ed has a drink when he's doing his show. It's how much we listeners have to drink."
Cheers.
So there we are.
Nothing like the great Very British good. Public.
There we are. That's one of the better ones. Thank you so much, there, Ed. Lovely to see you. Are you on this week or are you gallivanting?
Well, I'm on Friday. Yeah,
you're on Friday.
You asked me what was on it, and it went in one ear and one out the other. I've got Stella Creasy. I've got Rocco Forte.
And it went in one ear and out the other. I don't know why. Ed Vasey will be here from 7 o'clock tonight. Lara Spitt will be in your inbox at
3 p.m.
with the Times Red box.
I don't think Ed will be at 7 o'clock tonight.
No, 7 o'clock. You see, he wasn't listening either. He's already on his phone, organising lunch.
Friday night, 7 p.m. till 10 p.m. 3 hours of live radio.
I won't be able to listen because I'm on stage.
3 hours of live radio, the show that Matt Chorley is always rude about because people do report back to me.
I don't report. I said it's the most chaotic show on the radio.
Exactly.
Well, that's true. That's not rude. That's a factual account of what happens.
And we're making a decent fist of competing right now, aren't we?
That's fine.
That's all we've got time for on today's edition of Politics Without the Boring Bits. Don't forget you can get in touch by emailing me, matt@times.radio, like Richard did. Richard said, "I can't understand why so many listeners to the podcast have such a problem with the new photo of Matt. I quite like it. I saw a comment in a recent review on Apple Podcasts where it was likened to Jimmy Savile. Personally, I think it's more Frankie Howard. And which comedian worth their salt wouldn't be happy with that comparison? Keep up the good work, Matt, and ignore the naysayers. Quitter ye not." Very good. Thank you for that, Richard in Gloucester. Email me, matt@times.radio, or you can WhatsApp us, 033-003-2353. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.